watching the evolution of Western culture have made it quite clear, what maybe might should have been clear earlier, that we do not necessarily share values. And when it comes to the question of guns and gun control halacha, so American law may say one thing, whatever it might be, and halacha may have a completely different view. The fact, if the Second Amendment permits certain kinds of things, that doesn't mean a halachically observant Jew is necessarily permitted to do so. And it could theoretically go the other way as well. American law might prohibit something which halacha might permit. As a matter of course, I think that it's a given that if, in fact, American law prohibits something that halacha might permit, we would probably refrain in most cases from it unless it actually violates the halacha on the grounds of dina lamakos hadina. But I think it's also important to recognize in the reverse that if, in fact, the Torah prohibits something which American law permits, it still remains prohibited, even in areas that don't relate to issur heter, even in areas that relate to what we might call choshen mishpat. Before I start to talk about halacha, I wanted to draw your attention to two very interesting sources, both which relate to the contemporary themes that you might have of gun control. The first are psukim in Sefer, the source sheets? The source sheets? There were source sheets sent out. I should say, I sent the source sheets, but I... Okay. I apologize. It's not good, but okay. If anybody is interested, subsequent. Is your Xerox machine really close by? No, close by. Or I can readily make copies.
I can go downstairs.
I just think it will be... we'll just take a two-minute break. I will talk about... Unfortunately, I don't have the sources in front of me. So let me pull it out. Computer. And I want to just at least talk about the initial sources that relate to this particular issue. The Navi describes in Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, one of the early battles between the Philistines and Shaul and Yonasan. And so one of the issues that came up was weaponry. So it's kind of hard to imagine. You couldn't imagine today going out to war and having engaging in battle if you didn't have actually any weapons. I suppose if you were a martial artist, you might perhaps think that it would be a good idea, but the rest of us would think it's probably a suicide mission. So in Sefer Shmuel, so we read that you'll even get some of my notes on the thing now that it's been marked up, so you might even get a sense of where I'm heading. So the Navi says, "V'charash lo yimase b'chol eretz Yisrael." There were no smiths found in all of Eretz Yisrael. This incidentally happens to be, I think, the first place in Tanakh where the term Eretz Yisrael actually appears until this point, and throughout most of Tanakh it's called Eretz Canaan. But there was no smith to be found. Ki amru ha-plishtim pen yasu ha-ivrim cherem bo-chanis. Because the Philistines said that lest the Hebrews, lest the Jews make a sword or a lance. So the goal was obviously... the same reason probably why the founding fathers put in the Constitution not allowing the government to infringe on the right to bear arms, although it's depending on whose perspective you have that meaning of the Constitution. And as a result, what used to happen, you have to realize that the purpose that metal blacksmiths or smiths were needed not only for the purposes of weapons, but also if you're an agricultural society, so you have plows and you have all sorts of equipment that you actually need metal, which creates a problem because it's one thing to not allow them to have weapons, but the Philistines were not trying to starve them. So the Navi describes, "Vayaducho Yisrael plishtim liltosh ishes machareish toves eso ves kardimoves machareish aso." So what would happen is you had Philistines, and when you had implements that you needed to sharpen, whether it was your hoe or whether it was the shaft of the blade of the plow or whatever else it was, your axe, so you would bring it to the plishtim, and then the Navi describes exactly what the cost was, and what the plishtim would provide in exchange, what was the blacksmith's fee. So here, certainly, as far as I know, maybe there's something else in the ancient Near East, but this is the first attempt, actually, at gun control as a method of subduing a populace. The other source, which is very interesting and I think can be easily misread, is the comments of the Ramban in Parshas Bereishis. The Torah there speaks of the children of Tuval Kayin, of Lemech. And Lemech had several children. Amongst them was Tuval Kayin. And Tuval Kaim was Lotesh Kol Horesh Nechoshes Uvarzel. He was the one who seemingly invented metallurgy. And these are very interesting psukim in their own right. I think the Malbim, in his commentary, describes these as being sort of anthropological statements, right? It's a very basic question. Where do metal implements come from? Some of you might be aware Chazal asked the very same question about how do you make metal if you don't have metal, right? How does metallurgy first emerge? You know where Chazal asked that question? You learned Pirkei Avos? What's that? Tzvas bitzvas asuya, the things created by Nashmashos, is the answer. It's a small piece of the metallurgical question is, how did you get the first pair of tongs? In other words, if you need metal normally to make metal, where does it come from? So the answer is that's the answer to the Mishnah. It was one of the things that was created, according to Yesh Omrim, Bein Hashmashos. So the Ramban says that Tuval Kain actually, that's what the Malbim says about these psukim. But the Ramban here makes the following comment. He says, it would appear to me that Lemach was a very wise man, and he was an artisan in all sorts of areas of skills, and all meleches machsheves. You may recognize the term from the Mishkan, or Hilchos Shabbos, but it comes from the Mishkan. V'lamad v'limei libno ha-bechor in hamireh kifi teveh ha-pemos. He taught one child animal husbandry, or to be a shepherd. V'limei nesasheni chochmas ha-nigun. He taught him music. V'limei nesashlishi liltosh v'lasos choravos ha-remachim v'chanis ha-sehem v'cho klei ha-milchama. And he taught the others to make swords and lances and whatever weapons, all weapons of war. And his wives were afraid, said the Ramban, that he would be punished because he brought weaponry and murder to the world. And he was, in fact, embracing the way of his forefathers. He was the son. He was the descendant of the first murderer, who was Cain. He said, I didn't kill anybody. I'm not going to be punished. Why? Because there are other ways to kill people besides using weapons. You can kill somebody with blows, with pitzam and chaburos. And it's a much worse death than dying by the hands of the sword. And then he writes, the Rambam writes, "Ve'ein ha-cherem gorim ha-retzicha, ve'ein al-oso chet." The sword does not cause murder, and the person who makes the sword is not liable for sin, which is another way of saying, of course, guns don't kill people. The Ramban here is not necessarily endorsing that view. In fact, probably not. Thank you very much. Let's see what interesting thing I tell you about. Okay. So anyway. For those who were, thank you very much. I just was going through the first two sources. So the Ramban, remember Tuval Kaim is not necessarily regarded as a very positive figure. So the Ramban here, in a sense, is providing Tuval Kaim's excuse. He is not necessarily endorsing it. So anyway. And I think from a halakhic perspective, it is absolutely clear that the position of Tuval Kaim has been rejected. Be that as it may, these two sources are fundamentally agadic sources. They don't necessarily tell you anything for halakha. Now, there are theoretically two prohibitions that might be involved in terms of weapons. It's not obviously Chazal would have guns, but it's not any different. Weapons, owning weapons, selling weapons. Number one is a question of whether or not owning a weapon, and I'm going out of order here actually, involves a certain kind of danger. It sort of should be a given, although one would need to find the source and we'll read it later, that you're not supposed to keep dangerous things in your house. You're not supposed to keep dangerous things in your house because it's stupid, number one. Right? Presumably you don't want to see yourself get hurt, your spouse get hurt, your children get hurt accidentally, so it's a bad idea. But it's not really a bad idea, it's obviously a halacha concept as well. But then, even assuming that one, in fact, is very careful about the items in one's house, there is a concern as well with selling it to other people. And the reason for that is because if other people might do damage with these things, it potentially violates the prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, aside from the fact that it's a menace to the world. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah is the primary locus of the discussion of selling of weapons. The Gemara, which is under Roman numeral 2, cites the following story. Unrelated to weaponry, the halacha is you're not allowed to sell a large behemoth to a non-Jew. You're not allowed to sell a behemoth gasa to a guy. The reason for that was because Chazal were afraid that you might rent him. If you allow, we allow you to sell him the animal, number one, he might take it for a test drive, or he might borrow it from you, or he might rent it from you. And that in itself wouldn't be a problem, except for that if he does that on Shabbos, so a Jew, if a guy rents your behemoth on Shabbos, or borrows your behemoth, or test drives it on Shabbos, the behemoth still belongs to you, and there is a prohibition in the Torah, what's known as Shvisas Behemto, that not only are you not allowed to do work on Shabbos, but your behemoth is not allowed to do work on behalf of any human being on Shabbos. So if your behemoth is used to plow or to carry a burden on Shabbos, it's an issur d'oraisa of Shvisas Behemto. That's the pasuk in the Aseret HaDibros, V'chol Behemtecha. Sharchar v'chamar chol behemtecha. What do you mean? When the Torah says you're not allowed to do work, your animals can't do work. An animal doesn't have any mitzvahs, but you're not allowed to allow your animal to be used on Shabbos to do work. So that's why the Chachamim prohibited selling any behima gasa, which was typically, you generally don't do work with a sheep or a goat. I would suggest that you not try yoking a sheep up to a plow or something like that, or trying to ride on a sheep, or use it as a beast of burden. I don't think the sheep will do very well, and won't be very happy, and neither will you. So the bottom line is that's what they prohibited. So the Gemara now says as follows. Rabba Zabin Hahu Chamara Li Yisrael Hashid Limkar La'ahum. Rabbah sold a donkey to a Jew who was suspect to sell things he wasn't supposed to a non-Jew. So Amar Le Abayi, my time Avad Mar Hachi. Why did the master do that? Amar Le Anali Yisrael Zamini. Rabbah says, I sold it to a Jew. I didn't sell it to a non-Jew. In effect, he's almost arguing that it's what we would call lifnei de lifnei. It's not lifnei iver, or it's not. It's one step removed from the Isser itself, and it's not his problem. So Amar Le V'ha'azel. Rabbi says to him, he's going to go sell it to a non-Jew. So Rabbi says, who says he's going to sell it to a Jew? He's going to sell it to a non-Jew. He's going to sell it. Maybe he'll sell it to a Jew. That's not my problem. So now, as part of the sequence of questions, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. V'o Tanya, ein mocher lahem lo zayin velo klei zayin. You can't sell them any kind of, I'm not sure the difference between klei zayin and zayin are. You're not allowed to sell them weapons of any kind. You're not allowed to sharpen their weapons. It means if you're a gunsmith, you can't fix his gun. The satan seemed to be something like an anvil, and the kolarin are like shackles. No chains or anything else that they would use to imprison people. Whether it be a non-Jew or a kuti. What's a kuti? Sometimes kuti is a censor's term, but it's not a censor's term here. Kutim were the Samaritans, and the kutim were halachically Jewish. At least once upon a time they were. In the time of the Mishnah, a kuti is 100% Jewish. They kept some mitzvahs like the rest of the Jewish people did, and other mitzvahs they didn't keep. So the braisa says you're not allowed to sell it to a kuti. My time, but why not? You're going to say that you can't sell it to a Samaritan because he's suspect to the unmurder, the way a guy would be. It's not true. The Mishnah says that you're not allowed to have yichud with a guy. A Jewish male with a non-Jewish male can't have yichud because at least if you know anything about the relationships between Jews and pagans and the Greco-Roman period, you might understand the Mishnah a little bit because at times they were pretty, not always, but they were pretty nasty. So the Mishnah says there's an issur yichud because the non-Jew is chashed that he'll kill the Jew. So this is an issur yichud. So the Gemara says there's no Isser Yichud by a Kuti. So obviously, if there's no Isser Yichud between a Jewish male and a Kuti male, then obviously we're not afraid that Kutim are not murderers. So that can't be the reason. The reason why you're not allowed to sell it to a Kuti, to sell weapons to a Kuti, because he'll turn around and sell it to an non-Jew. If you're going to tell me if a Kuti doesn't believe in the Chachamim's Gezeros, but a Jew, it's possible if you sell it to a Jew who's Chashud, to sell weapons to a guy, he might do tshuva. He might not actually sell it. So the Gemara says, "V'Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avravua, Kedera Sham Ruasur Limkar LaOved Kochavim Kach Asur Limkar LiYisrael HaChashur Limkar LaOved Kochavim." Just as you're not allowed to sell it to a guy, you're not allowed to sell it to a Jew who's chashur to resell weapons to a guy. Rohit Basrei Tlasa Parse V'Yikadamri Parse B'Chala V'Lo Adrachei. Poor Rabba, he gave this psak, now he wanted to go back and say, no, he sold the stuff, he wanted to go back, I need to cancel the sale. One tradition is he ran three farsangs, that's like 12 kilometers, And he wasn't able to catch him. And the other version is he ran one parsa in the sand. If you've ever tried running in sand, you'll understand it's bad for your Achilles tendons, and it's much harder to run fast. So basically, Rabba wasn't able to reverse his psak. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Dimi Bar Abba, Kiderosh Asur Limkar LaOvid Kochavim, Asur Limkar LaListin Yisrael. Just as you're not allowed to sell non-Jew, you're not allowed to sell to Jewish criminals. Okay, Hechi Dabi, what is the status of this criminal? Either Chashid the Katil, if he's a Jewish criminal who is suspect of murdering people, so Pshita, I know it Kochavim. He's the same thing as a guy. It doesn't make a difference. Why should he be allowed to sell to a Jew? Just because he's Jewish, if he is suspect on murder. The low katil, if he's not a suspect of murdering, am I low? Why can't you sell him? Now, of course, you might say, yeah, but he's going to use it to rob people. But presumably, if a gun is useless to rob someone if you know that the person is not actually going to use the gun. So the Gemara says, la'olam de low katil. No, as a matter of course, he's the kind of listin who would not normally murder. However, the kind of guy who sort of attacks, a listen who attacks stealthily, and then they just try to get away. And we're afraid in the course of getting away, he's going to turn around to defend himself and end up killing someone. Fine. Now the Gemara continues. What is a tris? Anybody know? It's a shield. Right? What does the Mishnah Avos say? Something masim tovim kitris lefnei aparados, right? It's like a shield before punishment. So you're not allowed, according to one tradition, to sell him a shield. V'yeshom remochlem trisim. Some say that you're allowed to. My taima. Why can't you sell them a shield? The Gemara says ilem amishum demegana walayhu. If it's because they use it for self-defense, ihachi afilu chiti b'sari nami lo. You shouldn't be able to sell them food either, right? Because, in other words, selling somebody a shield, which is only used for defense, well, they're not harming anybody with that. So if the whole point is, in general, you're not allowed to sell them because you're supporting their enterprise, you're providing them with chiyus, with an opportunity to survive and live, well, then you shouldn't sell them food either. So the Gemara gives an astounding answer. Amar Rav, yefsher hachanami. You know what? If it's possible, then you shouldn't. And the Gemara then continues, ika damri no. Tresin hainu taim delo. You know why? Some say you're not allowed to sell shields. The chishalim zeinai who kath libigavayu. You know what happens when he runs out of arrows? He starts to use the shield as a bludgeon and he'll kill people with it. Okay. Fine. And then the Gemara says, v'yeshom, remember the other sheet, is mochalim tresim. The chishalim zeinai me'arak arke. The other sheet that says, no, you know what happens when he runs out of arrows? He runs. He flees. So you don't have to be concerned. Amar of Nachman, Amar Barvua Halacha Kiyeshom. So Nachman says that we possibly like the Yeshom, and you're allowed to sell defensive weaponry. So I guess you're allowed to sell a non-Jew Patriot missiles, or what is it? What's the Israeli defense system called?
The Iron Dome.
The Iron Dome. Okay, but you're not allowed to sell missiles. Fine. Amar of Ada Barav. By the way, it's a given you can't sell that to enemies of the Jewish state. Even if it's defensive. The assumption here is you're selling to a guy, Stam a guy who's not necessarily specifically an enemy. So by selling him a defensive weapon, you're not endangering anybody. Okay. Amar Rav Ata Bar Abba, a mochim lehem ashashir shel barzel. You're not allowed to sell them tongues of iron. My taima, what's the reason? Presumably, mishum dechal shiminayu klezayim. Because they're going to form out of it, fashion out of it, weapons. Ihachi afilu marivachatzin enami. You shouldn't be allowed to sell them spades or hoes. Why? Because they'll melt it down, and they'll also use it to make weapons. So Amar Rav Zvid, Rav Zvid responds, no, but parzala kindua, with Indian iron or Indian steel. It happens to be that in India, in the 6th century BCE, new processes were developed, I think, in the context of making iron that made a much stronger form of iron. It was highly desired for weapons, and it was exported from there. So when the Gemara refers to Barzel Hindua, Indian steel or Indian iron, it's because, in fact, this was a weapon-grade iron. And that's why you're not allowed to sell it. But you don't need to use weapon-grade iron when you're making a hoe or you're making a shovel or something like that. So that's why you're allowed to sell them agricultural implements, but you're not allowed to sell them a raw material that is used typically specifically for the purposes of manufacturing weapons. So now, of course, the Gemara is faced with one interesting problem. But v'ha'idana dekam is avnina. It's a classic bafli. Today, we sell them weapons. Apparently, you know, YU has a kolel that was endowed by a weapons dealer. I'm not going to comment now whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But it wouldn't be the first time in Jewish history that Jews were involved in the weapons trade. So the Gemara says, "Vayidana the Kamas Avnina." Today we sell weapons to the non-Jews. How can that be? The Gemara says, "Amar Avashi lefarsoi." We only sell it to the Persians. The Meganu ilavan, because they actually protect us. In other words, if Jews are selling it to allies of Jews who are protecting Jews, so then it is permissible. The question one can ask, of course, is what exactly is going on here? Is it purely Jewish self-interest, or is the argument is that if they are defending us, presumably they are acting with a degree of justification, and therefore it's not selling it to people who are actually violating Shvichus Damim? Yes? In the back. There's no substantive connection other than the question of, if you're not allowed to sell X to a non-Jew, are you allowed to sell it to a Jew who is suspect of reselling to non-Jews?
Right, but in that case, you would assume that it's connected to the whole thing of the animal. Because you mentioned that the reason why the animal is a problem is because out here, it's like a
getter
to a situation where your animal might be...
The guy might do malacha
with on
Shabbos.
Does that mean that you're not allowed to profit from violence or murder or whatever?
That's a pretty good assumption to start with. The assumption is that selling the weapon to a person who's irresponsible is a violation of Lefnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. You're enabling someone to do an aveira, so you are responsible for that.
But the
question is, and now this is the second step, that's why you can't sell a behemoth to a guy, and that's why you can't sell weapons to a guy. The Gemara's discussion is then, can you sell to a Jew who's chashed to sell to a non-Jew? Yes. Okay. So now, the Shulchan Aruch writes, and there is a Mishnah that actually, well, they're going to quote it, Ein mochrin lohem, Veloli Yisrael ha-chashed limkralim. You can't sell either to a guy or to a Jew who's suspect to resell to a guy. Veloli Yisrael listim, and not the Jewish bandits. Davar sheyesh bo nezek l'rabim. Something that has a danger to the public. Kigon dubim va'arayos. Right? I guess that might have been, kinds of weapons in those days. You think about what the Romans did whatever they used to do when they used to take their prisoners and feed them to lions and all sorts of things like that, or let them fight lions. So you're not allowed to sell them dubin, bears, and arayas, and lions. Veloshum klezayin velo sadam. Can't sell them weapons, you can't sell them the tools that you use to make weapons. Velo kvalim velkolarim, you can't sell them shackles and things that they put prisoners in. Veshal shalosh shabarzil, and chains of iron. Vafilu esher shabarzil, even the raw material, even the tongues of iron, you can't sell them. Velo mashchizil lahem klezayin, you can't sharpen weapons for them, and you can't build with them places where they judge people to execute them. So it's clear that the Shulchan Aruch paskins, no reason it wouldn't paskin, that selling weapons to to anyone who might violate Shvichus Damim, which would include either individuals or governments that would engage in unacceptable behavior towards their own citizens or to the people of other countries, is absolutely prohibited, and presumably it is an issur d'oraisa lefnei iver lo sitein mechshol. The Shulchan Aruch does continue with the exception. If in fact the Jewish people are living amongst the non-Jews and they establish with them a treaty, so then the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutter limkar klezayin alde hamelech v'gaya sosad. You can sell weapons specifically to the king's servants, to his troops, because they're using it for basically self-defense, protecting the country and protecting the Jews. Basically, it's protecting one's self. Okay. Some have argued, the question is, and this obviously is primarily, it obviously affects if there are individual Jews who are involved in the weapons trade, which, as you might understand, in the real world is highly problematic. It also has implications in terms of Medinat Yisrael, who Medinat Yisrael will be selling weapons to. On the one hand, it's a very tricky moral issue. There are certain countries that Israel may sell weapons to that are not exactly democracies. Israel does so in a certain sense for maintaining its arms industry, which may be a form of self-defense. Some would argue that that comes under the category of miganu aleihem. In other words, even if you're not selling to the people who are directly protecting you, if selling you allows you to maintain an arms industry for your own self-defense, then that might be an argument in defense of it. We'll just say it's something of a slippery slope. It's very easy to justify selling weapons to murderous people. The line between what is necessary for a country's well-being versus profiteering, or I should say just making a profit, and what we might term blood money, is a very, very thin line. Anyway, that's as far as the issue of selling weapons. The question is, what about owning weapons? So here, I think that one of the questions that has to be explored in evaluating is it appropriate for a Jew to own a weapon is the question of what is the level of danger. And the level of danger cuts both ways. There was a terrible tragedy in Orlando in which 50-something people were killed in the nightclub. But sadly, very sadly, you know, every day in this country on average, 35 to 40 people are killed with guns. They don't happen in all, you know, somehow that's perfectly fine. That's not perfectly fine. Obviously, what happened in Orlando was horrible as well. One doesn't make the other better or worse. It happens to be, of those 35 to 40 gun deaths every day, about two-thirds of them are suicide. It's a staggering number. And it's pretty clear that in most of those cases, without the availability of guns, the suicide would not be attempted or wouldn't be successful. Basically, gun is a very efficient and clean way to commit suicide. A kitchen knife is a lot messier and a lot less pleasant, even for the person who's trying to kill him or herself. It's quite clear when you compare statistical danger of the United States to other Western countries that do not allow citizens to own guns, the death rates from guns and the death rates in general from homicide are starkly lower. Obviously, theoretically, there could be multiple contributors to that particular issue. So one of the things one has to determine, and I'm not here to determine that, even though I think it's pretty clear on whole in certain contexts at least, is to figure out how much is whether correlation is causation or not, or are the other factors coming into play. It seems to me, and I don't know this is, I can't state this as a fact, I'm not a sociologist, that I would guess that murder of others is in many ways has a heavy cultural element that has to do with pockets and locations, different places in society, but suicide is probably very much a product simply of the availability of guns. It's not just, in other words, the differences in suicide rates are not a function of different cultures, it's a function actually of the efficiency of suicide with a gun. But one has to make that determination and figure out what in fact, is there a greater statistical danger? Now I want to first look at the sources in the Gemara and I'll comment on what I think it means in terms of contemporary terms. The Gemara in Ksuba states, speaking about, there's a concept of certain when animals do damage, not in a normal way, but sort of in a damaging way. If an ox eats my food that's sitting in my backyard, that's normal. That's not unusual behavior for an ox. That's what oxen do. They eat. If an oxen walks on the path in my field and he tramples stuff, that's not abnormal. That's what oxen do. They walk. But if an ox goes crazy and starts goring my animals or starts trampling my stuff in a fit of rage, so that is not normal. And that's what we call shor, that's called keren, the nezek of keren, and the shor only pays chatzi nezek. Happens to be because chatzi nezek is a knas, but it's not mamon, for those who are familiar with the halachic distinction. So we don't have knas in chutzla. We don't have knas at all today because we don't have real smicha, we don't have real rabbis, as I like to say. I'm a fake rabbi. There are no people with real smicha today. So that being the case, the Gemara says as follows: V'hashtra da'amris, palga niska knasa. Since palga chatzi nezek is considered knas, and you don't collect that in Bavel, hay kalba da'ochal imre v'shunra da'ochal tarnagole ravrave mishunahu. It feels like Pesach should be coming now. Chad gadya. If his dog eats a sheep, or a cat eats chickens, big chickens. Apparently, cats would only eat little chickens. Pick on someone your own size normally. Mishunahu, it's highly unusual behavior. Veloma gabina mebabel, you can't collect it in babel. Aval zutre, if it eats little chickens, urcheh, that's normal. Omegabina, that's called niske shein. Ve'itofas, lomafkina mina, I don't want to talk about what that means. Let's skip this line. Go to the end of the second line. Bein kach uvein kach mishamtin alei. Either way, we put the owner of the dog or the cat in cherem. We excommunicate them until they get rid of the dog or the cat. Da'amrin alei, we say to him, salei kazekach. Get rid of the nezek. If you have a dangerous animal, you have to get rid of it. Midi Rav Nosson, how do we know that? The Rav Nosson, Tanya, Rav Nosson, Omer, minayin shalegado adam kele rabasof beso. How do you know that a person is not allowed to raise a dangerous dog in his house? Velo yamid sulam ra'u abaseh, but they say you're not allowed to have a rickety ladder where someone might climb up on it, injure themselves, or kill themselves. Shenemar velo sasim damim bevesecha. You're not allowed to put danger in your house. That actually comes from the mitzvah makeh, when you build a fence around a flat roof that has people have access to. Velo sasim damim bevesecha ki kol hanofel mimenu. The Gemara Baba Kama notes the exception to this. Lo yigadal adam esakela, the last source on the first side. Ela imken kosher b'shal shalaos. Tan rabbanon, lo yigadal adam esakelev. You're not allowed to raise a dog, ela imken kosher b'shal shalas, unless it's tied up with chains. Avol megadal hu b'ir hasmucha l'sefar, the kosher b'yom ha'matir v'layla. If you live near the border, which in their times was very, very dangerous, some would argue it's dangerous today, but I'm not terribly sure that that's the case, at least in this country. So the halacha is that you're allowed to raise the dog and let it loose at night. You have to keep it chained during the day. In other words, if you're using the dog for self-defense, it's permissible, but otherwise it's prohibited. So from a halachic perspective, what it means basically is the question of having weapons or any type of dangerous item is a function of a cost-benefit analysis. If I were, for example, to make the... And one can talk both in terms of strict halacha and in terms of a values question. If I were to say, I live in Teaneck. Thank God, Teaneck is a pretty safe place. The last time we had a murder that was a non-acquaintance murder, in like someone breaking and entering a total stranger, I don't know. I don't think it's happened in the almost 25 years that I've been in Teaneck, and I'm not sure when the last time happened before that. Pretty much the very rare cases that have been such things that I'm aware of have been what we would call acquaintance murder, where the fact that you keep a weapon in your home for self-defense is not going to help you. You were targeted and the person targeting you knew exactly what they were doing. But the situation where a person would have saved their life and might have been able to save their life if they had had a gun, and yet because they didn't, were killed, as far as I know, is non-existent. So presumably then, the question of being samach l'svar, the argument of having a gun as a matter of self-defense, is essentially non-existent. Weight against that would have to be that people keep guns in their house, and I don't think too many people in Teaneck own guns. Most of the Orthodox community, for a long time, most of the Jewish community are not gun owners. It's not, and there's a good reason for it, as I'll explain in terms of Torah values, but not from just a strict halachic perspective. But the question of if people have guns, what is the level of danger to oneself, to one's family, and doing so would have to be calculated. I'm not sure, technically speaking, the level of sakana would rise to the point of saying that it's categorically prohibited, but certainly from a values perspective, it's hard for me to defend, again, even if it's technically mutter, in terms of the spirit of the law, it would be very difficult, barring a person who actually had a real need for a particular reason, to argue why most people, where most Jews live, in fact, would be justified in owning a weapon. Because it would seem that the danger far outweighs any possible benefit from it. But that's really, at some level, a statistical question to determine based upon a circumstance. Obviously, if you live in the Shtachim in Israel, or maybe even not just in the Shtachim, there are reasons why a person might be a good idea that people actually carry weapons. But you appreciate the fact the State of Israel doesn't have a Second Amendment. For a long time, soldiers used to carry their weapons with them when they left the base and were off duty. I don't remember how long ago, but the government prohibited it, and the reason they prohibited it was because of rates of suicide, because a gun is a very effective tool for killing oneself. So again, I think in terms of its halachic application, in this case, the question of los sasin damim v'secha is determined based upon sort of a statistical analysis. If it doesn't rise to the level of truly being dangerous, it might technically be permitted. In other words, I can't tell you exactly what percentage of sakana, but certainly, again, from a values perspective, to me, it's very hard to defend. There are two other aspects that I wanted to talk about that relate to the question of guns, although I think much less so for our community. But here I go back to the question of us being countercultural. There are large swaths of this country in which there is a culture of hunting. Now, when I speak about hunting here, I don't speak about hunting to feed oneself. Hunting to feed oneself other than the fact that we can't do it because if you shoot the animal, you can't eat it, is not inherently a negative thing. You know, in New Jersey, even in Teaneck, we're overrun by deer. Bambi is not exactly so cute when he's eating your garden or eating people's gardens. So they occasionally have to do deer culls, not enough. But what they do often when they do it is they take the meat, and it's very good meat, it's very healthy meat, and they bring it to, you know, pantries and soup kitchens and feed it to the poor, which I think is a wonderful thing. But there is a culture in this country that exists in many pockets, not of hunting for the purposes of eating, but rather to mount the trophy on the wall. You know, it might have been the reaction was outrageous and absurd to the person who killed Cecil the lion, because people seem to care more about dead lions than about dead babies or starving babies, even in this country. But putting that question aside of the absurd reaction, you know, to the person who killed Cecil the lion, the idea of hunting for sport in that case is something which is, it represents a certain value, and it's a value that is the absolute antithesis of Torah. There's a passage in Vayikra Rabbah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Kol Behemos V'Libyasan, Heim Kanigan Shel Tzadikim La'olam Haba. The behemoth, the behemoth, and the Leviathan are the mythic creatures which are supposed to be the feast in the world to come for the Tzadikim. So basically, God, if you read Sefer Yoav, God is going to have to kill them. He's going to have to hunt them, and that's going to be what you might call, it's like the bullfighting equivalent, or that the tzaddikim will enjoy in the world to come. Only the person who didn't participate in watching the hunting for sport done in this world, and obviously in Roman theaters and circuses, whatever it was, only that person will merit to enjoy the livyasan ba'olam haba. And interestingly enough, this makes its way in effect into Shulchan Aruch. In a discussion of hunting on Shabbos, the Rambam writes that the second source, Hamishase kelev achar chaya b'Shabbos havetzeda. If you use an animal to hunt on Shabbos, a dog to hunt down a wild animal, it's considered tzeda. The Yesh Omer, the Rambam adds, apachal asur latzud beklavim mishum moshav leitzim. The Rambam is referring to this passage in Vayikra Rabbah. That one is, remember, doing so, if the dog is hunting the animal, it's probably going, well, it depends on the circumstances, but probably it's not to eat the animal. It's not going to render it edible. And the Rambam says it's considered hunting, it's prohibited during the week because it's a moshav leitzim. Perhaps the most famous manifestation of this particular issue of values is a famous tshuva in the Noda Yehuda, Rabbi Cheska Landau, who was probably the Gadol Hador, certainly in Ashkenaz, in the 18th century. He was the Rav in Prague. His tshuvos, you know, are probably, if you were to talk about tshuvos, shelos and tshuvos in the Achronim, probably the single most important collection of tshuvos are those of the Noda Yehuda. And the Noda Yehuda was asked as follows. He was asked about a Jew who had become wealthy, and he had acquired real estate. He had acquired lands and forests where all sorts of creatures crawled in them. Bod termos kol chai so ya. And now this person wanted to go hunting. And in such classic fashion, you know, unfortunately sometimes Jews who are committed to halacha, or at least in a sociological sense, have a very narrow view. The line often goes, we like to say, that if only lo tignovu were a footnote in the Mishnah Berurah instead of a pasuk in the Torah, more Jews would observe it. And so in this context, the other view that the person was asked, is it permissible? Is it bal tashchis when you kill the animals? Is it tzar balei chayim? So the Noda Yehuda goes through the halachic discussion, and he talks about why it's technically not considered tzar balei chayim, and why it's technically not considered bal tashchis. At the end of the tshuva, he finds a reason why it's asur, which would not necessarily apply today because of sakana. No, it's an unnecessary sakana. But in the meantime, before the Noda Yehuda gets to the halachic part, he says the following. If you look in the tshuva of the Noda Yehuda, it's in the sort of the second paragraph. It's the fifth line. The word begins with amna. I really wonder about this. The only hunters we find in Tanakh are Rak ben Nimrod uve Esav. Yeah, the two classic hunters are Nimrod and Esav. We know who Esav was, and Nimrod, according to Chazal, was a Rasha as well. This is not the way Jewish people, it's not the way we don't hunt animals for sport. Look when we say, someone buys a new suit. You tell them, Tevala, we say, Tchadeshu Tevala, I think. So, Kasav the Mariv, the Rav Yaakov Weil wrote,
The Pesachov, Hevi Rama Ba'orachayim Sursim Reishachim, where the Rama quotes it in Hilchos Brachos, She'ein lo markein ala nasa me'oros behema mishum racham aval kol asab. You don't, and some don't say a shechianu on something made out of leather. Why? Because it came from an animal that had to be killed. The afshir Rama kasab lo shutam chalosh, even though the Rama says that it's a weak reason, why? Hainu mitzad she'ein ochir she'bishvila yamisu behema. You don't have to kill an animal to get a hide. In other words, there are plenty of circumstances where you don't. The animal was killed a long time ago, or the animal dies on its own. Then you can use the hide. There's nothing bad about that. The Ramah says many people are makpid that you don't do this when it comes to leather, because leather is commonly taken by killing an animal. How could a Jew go ahead and kill animals without a need, rat ligmor chemdas zemano lisasek b'tzeda, just to whittle away his time enjoying hunting? In other words, this is not a Torah value. This is the antithesis of Torah values. We believe that we're supposed to imitate the Ribbono Shel Olam, imitati odei, v'rachamov al kol ma'asav. We say it three times a day. God's mercy is upon all of his creatures. The idea that a Jew would go hunting just for sport, we know to be true, the thought was inconceivable. Okay, the last point, I think, relates not so much just to hunting, but to the question of how we look at weapons. There's a really interesting debate. The Mishnah and Shabbos, in the sixth parak, talks about those things that we're allowed to wear out when we walk, if there's no Erev, we go into the Rosh Hasharav, and those things we're allowed to wear on Shabbos and those things that we're not allowed to wear. So, and also things that you might even amazingly be allowed to carry. For example, a person who may need a cane to walk may actually be allowed to carry it on Shabbos, walking with it. That might not be considered carrying in the Rosh Hasharav. So the Mishnah has a discussion. First it talks about weapons, not weaponry, but the chainmail or armor that you would be carrying, and the question is whether you're allowed to walk out wearing it or not. But in that case, at least it's a beged. Then the Mishnah turns his attention. What about if a soldier is carrying his weapon in his hands? So the Mishnah says on the Roman numeral 5, lo yetzer ha'ish lo b'sayef lo b'keshes, not with a sword and not with a bow, v'lo b'tris, not with a shield, v'lo b'ala, some type of weapon, lo b'romach, not with a spear. V'im yotza, if you carry it in Rosh Hasharav, the Tanakhama says, Chayev Chatas, you will mechal al Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, no, tachshitim ein lo. It's like jewelry, right? It's decorative. It makes them look cool. It makes them look, fashionable. V'chachamim omrim einam elo l'gnai. Chum said, there's nothing fashionable or jewelry-like about weapons. Shenemar, they quote the pasuk from Yeshaya, v'chitzuchar vosam li'itim v'chanisu sehim l'mas meiros, it's on the walls of the UN, v'lo yisal goyal garcherev, v'lo yimid ol mechama. Weapons are bad things. Sometimes they are necessary, but they are a necessary evil. They are not good things. They should not be glorified. We should not be glorifying the warrior. That is not a Torah value. The Gemara in Chulin tells a story, some of you may know. Pinchas ben Yair was this enormous, tremendous tzaddik, and one of his aspects, he believed very strongly in not taking from other people. So Rebbe was, they say, from the day he reached an age he could understand, he wouldn't even benefit from his father's shulchan. And Rebbe was after Pinchas ben Yair for years. He wanted to join him for a meal. And finally, after enough times, finally he said yes. And Rebbe's fist lit up. So Pinchas ben Yair said to him, what do you think? I took a nether not to get hanah from any of the Jewish people? No. I don't want to eat bite with people because there are people who don't have, can't afford, and yet they feel they're going to want to feed me. I don't want to put them in that position. And then those people who have what to feed me, but they really don't want to, they're stingy of heart, and he doesn't, the quotes the Pasuk, Al Tulcham es Lechem Ra'ayim. So you have, Rebbe was wealthy, and you want to, and you wish to give me. However, I have a mitzvah mission right now when I come back on the way. When he came back, he enters Rebbe's house and he sees these white mules. And Pinchas ben Yair said, "Malach hamavis b'bayis hazeh." And I'm going to eat here? These white mules were known for being dangerous. They gave a really nasty bite. He said, "The angel of death in this house. I'm not eating here." So Rebbe said, "I'll sell them." Pinchas ben Yair says, "Then you're violating the favor." Rebbe says, "I'll make them lame." He says, "It's tzar b'alechai." "I'll kill them." He says, "It's bal tashlis." And meanwhile, Pinchas ben Yair didn't eat with Rebbe. because he had these dangerous animals in his house. And so I think that that makes it very, very clear, I think, where Chazal and where the Torah stands in terms of how we relate to the question of weapons and so on. Regardless of what the Second Amendment actually says and what the law is, certainly we do not view, in terms of Torah values and sometimes even halachically speaking, we do not view guns and weapons as a good thing. And there's a very interesting passage. My longtime chaver, Rabbi Yochanan Adler, I think he teaches something here at Stern. Many years ago, he drew my attention to a passage in a sefer called Mesoras Moshe. It's sort of a Baal Peh transmission of Moshe Feinstein's comments, not from his tshuvas, the Igros Moshe, but people knew him. Rabbi Adler knew Moshe. He grew up on the Lower East Side, so he has particular connections to the Feinsteins. So I just want to read that last passage there. Pam tama Ravenu amashakara hayom kol kach anashim harbe masim shavetzichos. So much murder going on. V'tama echzeh shemanichan anashim liknos akdachim b'America. Why don't let people buy guns? Dover shemistama shemedina cheres lomatir. Mistama that no other country allows. Most other countries have a fair degree of gun control. Halo ikar haretzichos nasim be'ilu lo b'dekira shel sakin. And a contrary point to Lemech, who claimed innocence that guns don't kill people, people kill people. Rav Moshe said, people are killing people with guns, not by stabbing them with knives. V'zeh rak rishus shel kama ashirim shelo manichem hamimshala la'osram. This is just the wickedness of certain wealthy people who won't let the government actually prohibit them. I'll leave you to judge whether Rav Moshe's judgment, which was his estimation, whether in fact was correct when he said it or might even be correct today. So anyway, I think it's very clear from a Torah, in a Torah society, in constructing a Torah society, and this is not a Torah society by any stretch of the imagination on so many counts that we are surrounded by, but in a Torah society, it's pretty clear that maintaining control in some sense over dangerous weapons is certainly a Torah value. Again, what goes on in this country is a separate question. The United States is not governed by Torah law, but in terms of our values, certainly we do not see weapons as a good thing, and we prohibit selling them to people for whom might do dangerous things with them, and we're not necessarily keen on owning them either. Yes.
Hunting animals, killing animals gratuitously and stuff like that is wrong, and having a gun might kill people. What about going to the gun range and shooting for enjoyment according to this sort of?
So again, I would argue to me, full disclosure here, my teenage son, who's now in Eretz Yisrael, for a long time, I think he's less infatuated now, but for a long time, as many boys are, up till a certain age, been infatuated with guns. And once someone without our knowledge, his good friend and family, or sort of invited him to the gun range, and he went once, not that it made his parents very happy. I think it's clear to me from a Torah perspective, unless it's for the purpose of self-defense, it's exactly what no Dibhuda talks about hunting, but we consider weapons a b'dievet at best. Why would a person derive pleasure from firing a weapon? And even if one somehow did, I think it would be appropriate to recognize that it's not a good pleasure to derive. So is it technically us, or no, it's technically not us. So the low on occasion of their accents at gun ranges, but I don't think that rises to the level to consider a sakana that you could argue is prohibited. But I think from a values perspective, people shouldn't want to be involved with weapons unless they have them. Yes? So if you're going fishing, so first there are two things with fishing. Firstly, sometimes people fish and they throw the fish back in. And I think that as an activity, what you're really doing there is you're not actually engaged in hunting. You're actually engaged in silent meditation. It's supposed to be very relaxing. I haven't done it since I was a kid. So I don't think that's not quite the same thing. It's also a question of the impression of what you're doing. In other words, you're not killing. Even when you hunt fish, it's different than killing an animal in terms of the impact upon the human being. Because Ramban, a couple of weeks ago, his Parsha and Shiloh HaKein, speaks about about what the mitzvah is about, and he comments in explaining the Gemara. The Gemara in Mishnah Bracha says that someone who says Al Kansa Tzipor Yagi Rachamecha Meshatkin, or so, if someone explains the mitzvah Shiloh HaKein as God have mercy upon the animals, you silence them. So why? So the Ramban says, not because there are no reasons for the Torah's mitzvahs the way the Rambam explains that passage in the Moreh Nebuchim. No, the Ramban says because he misunderstood the purpose. The purpose of Shiloh HaKayin is not to have mercy on the animals, it's to have mercy on us. We want to be merciful, and the way you become merciful is acting in a merciful fashion. If you act in a cruel fashion, so then you become cruel. So the Ramban says, explaining the last Mishnah in Kiddushin, that Tov Shevet Tabachim Shutafo Shal Amalek, the best of the butchers is considered a partner of Amalek. So Rashi says because they all cheat and they put treif stuff in the kosher pile, right? And that's why they're Shutafo Shal Amalek. The Ramban says no. The Ramban says Amalek is the epitome of cruelty. And he says it's a Davar Yadua that many people who tend to shech the large animals tend to become cruel, which is true. You're repeatedly engaged in killing. You step on ants, it's not the same thing as Shech the Behema. It has, viscerally, it's different. So fishing is different in that sense. And I assume also when people fish, you fish to, when I was a kid, sometimes we caught kosher fish. So we brought it home, and my grandmother, prepared the fish, and some members of the family ate it. So there's nothing wrong. I don't think I ate it. But the point is that there's nothing wrong with fishing or hunting when one is actually consuming the food. We can't hunt not by typical means of hunting, and then eat the animal, but fish we can. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it, right? If you're not gonna eat the fish, then it's certainly it's inappropriate to fish if you're not gonna throw the fish back in, or if you're gonna injure the fish in the process, of the hunting. But if not, then it's something a little bit different. Yes.
What about having archery at the activity in camp? Is that similar to shooting range?
So, what I would say is as follows. Again, halachically, they're both permissible, but I think that what archery means today, for the most part, is not as a weapon, it's a skill. But guns are associated with killing. That's their point. So yes, there is a skill, it's a similar kind of skill, it's different, mechanically slightly different, but I think that if you ask me from a Hashkafic perspective, arrows have basically turned from being, once upon a time they were, skilled weaponry to basically just being some type of a skill, as opposed to something which is an implement of death, right? It's not very common. I don't know if there are, I don't know how many people, killed. If there are, 40,000 homicides or something like that in this country a year, 50,000 homicides, I'm willing to bet that less than 100 of them are by bow and arrow. But the, a significant, overwhelming majority of them are actually by gun. Is there a difference, again, it's not, there's a difference, I think, also between going to a gun range, probably, and skeet shooting, right? One is really a highly skilled type of, both require skill. So again, I'm not going to say it's us, or I think there's a degree of grayness here, but I think there's a really big difference between archery and a gun range. Again, I'm not saying that it's us or to go to a gun range. I just I wonder why one would derive such pleasure from the shooting. Go ahead. Last question.
In the Mishnah, we're talking about using weapons in fashion. Would that be referring to people who are bullet
hesitant? No, it's referring to a soldier actually carrying his weapons, right? Imagine, think about the picture of the Israeli soldier walking, carrying his Uzi, right? It conveys a certain aura, but that's not a good aura. Wearing a bullet, I'm not sure, firstly, make sure this gunpowder's out of the bullets. The truth is, that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. On Shabbos, if you have a necklace made of bullets, it's probably, not only are you not chayav chatas, it's probably mutter to wear it, because it is tashit. I do question the Hashkafic judgment in having such a tachshit. In other words, again, what are we saying, when that's what it is? If you took a bullet and you bent it out of shape, like you bent the plowshares, that would be a statement. That's a very different kind of thing, right? Again, the question is, what is the message that's being sent, in doing?